Oh, hey, Kate.
Hey Ryan, hey Ryan, this is more than a crush.
What?
Sorry, that's all I've got.
That's all you've got? That's all you've got? You don't have more?
So,
You don't have more?
do you think everybody should switch to becoming a part-time yoga teacher and stop teaching full-time, like everyone, just as a rule?
I don't know that I could say everybody as a rule, but I certainly think that I don't see yoga teachers ever getting compensated to the point, like with the exception of like a very, very few, like a very few people who are in the right place at the right time and sort of rode the wave. I don't see anybody being able to be compensated enough to be just a yoga teacher, meaning that you're not doing, admin at a studio, or you're not having just a completely separate job outside of yoga, or that there isn't some other sort of point of revenue. I just don't see that being possible. On the other hand, like the sometimes the sort of what are the words I'm what are the words that I'm looking for? The like the skills and the values sometimes of those other jobs sometimes come into conflict with the yoga, both in a like time sense, but also in a like ethical sense. And that can be challenging. Which is not to say Which is not to say that that would only happen if someone was a yoga teacher and had a part-time job just doing like something completely out of the realm of yoga. I would actually say it's more likely to come into conflict if someone is like really practicing, really studying, and like works for a company that is yoga adjacent. Like I bet those two things would come into conflict more quickly. Like if you worked for Lululemon. And you were really like, I feel like at some point you'd be like, huh, what, like there would just need to be pause. And anybody out there who works for Lululemon, that comes to mind because I just know many people who have had that quandary specifically. So if you don't have that quandary, that's perfectly fine. Maybe things have changed there, but, I use that as the sort of monolith for all yoga adjacent company companies out there.
Oh, that's a tough one. We haven't talked about that in a while.
I feel like that was the first episode.
Yeah,
I feel like
yes.
that was exactly 112 episodes ago that we talked about that.
Yeah, I'm deciding if anything has shifted in my heart space
It's
around.
if everybody could just
No, it
drop
really
into their
hadn't.
heart space real quick and just
I just, heart space is currently phlegmy, but
Sure. It's very phlegmy.
I think as I, since we've last touched on that, I think I have more feelings. Oh, I had so many feelings then about aligning yourself, how we align ourselves with brands, or, even professionally, the work we're doing, being in concert with, teaching yoga, at least ethically. And I think that now I get just as cranky when I see yoga teachers that I respect aligning themselves with brands that, you know, are highly, highly questionable.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, mostly because of their profit motives, like, and, you know, and just some of the things that they've done to their community.
Yeah.
Just the body shame alone. It makes me mad that, you know, colleagues of mine still think that it's like awesome and good to champion with that. And it's sometimes like under the auspices of, oh yeah, but it's community building. And it's like, well, what community is being built? You know, what is that? It's a community of purchasers, you know? It's like, I just think about all the events that are promoted, you know, with, I don't know, an ambassador. And
well, do you know that I was listening to a podcast the other day regarding the whole Nike ad that came out with Colin Kaepernick and people burning burning their shoes or whatever, because they were, I don't know, it was silly. But one of the things that they said is that Nike actually like has this term, Henry, like they're after Henry, which stands for high earners, not rich yet.
What?
Yes. So I feel like the type of community that's being built through these brands are Henry's. That's the community you're trying to bring together. People who can afford to spend $170 on pants.
Which would be like youthful, lower middle class, often white, thin people that are on their way to being middle and upper middle class.
Yeah. With like first, you know, couple of jobs at, you know, following that sort of college to consulting firm pipeline and getting hooked into that cycle. Yeah. Until they become yoga teachers. Someone should do a sociological research paper on undergrad degree to consulting firm / financial firm to yoga teaching. Someone should see if there is in fact some sort of like pipeline going on.
Oh. Nothing would shock me less. I don't know. I've been having a really reactive couple of weeks about this is, you know, about social media and about social media and community and friendship and competition and you know, it's nothing super new. It's certainly nothing that we haven't talked about or at least grazed upon over the years. But, you know, the thing that changes is us, as you and I age.
Shh, we're not aging.
We're, as we get seasoned, you know, it's watching my response stay the same in some ways and evolve in others. Like, I think that I take it less personally than I used to. Like, I think a lot of the fire I had was like, I was like, well, how can you be my friend and make those choices, you know, sure, to like people? Yeah. And now I'm just like, you know, everybody's just got to put their head down and make a living. And we're all trying to do our best and that's all we can do. And I wonder, it makes me wonder what I'm doing, you know, that is probably causing somebody else out there to have the same
consternation.
Visceral response, you know, and it does make me I, watching, I'm officially in a place now where I'm watching like a new wave of, I'd say, you know, you're the generation, this is so Boston specific and we're going to lose some audience here, but so your generation educated my generation. This is super sloppy and not super accurate. I know that there's a lot of blur. And now some of the people in my generation, quote unquote, or graduating class are starting to become yoga teacher trainers as well. So I'm seeing the first, second wave of that round now. And I'm just sort of reflecting on like what if anything is changing in the demographic of people that are involved in yoga teacher trainings. And I'll be specific to Boston because everything else would be conjecture.
Sure.
And I really do think that I'm noticing a greater diversity in people in teacher trainings, in large part due to the fact that there's been a social movement around inclusivity, and also in the fact that I think more and more people are like, well, I can do it even if I don't want to teach, because studios are marketing it as not a professional training, but instead like a way to deepen their relationship with the practice.
Mm-hmm.
So the results of which is a wider variety of people from different places in their life to join the conversation. Do you think I'm wrong? Do you think things are changing?
I mean, if they're changing, I don't think it's very much. I mean, I haven't been in a like large teacher training situation in a really long time, so I don't know, but I have heard from folks that you know, still pretty fucking white. not necessarily very diverse in terms of, I mean, I guess it's like, where are we setting the bar? Like, are we setting the bar in relationship to like just all white, skinny, female folks as it is typically described, and the fact that we might have a few folks who differ in gender or who differ in body type or who differ in age. Like, are we considering that a victory, or are we just like, I guess I just don't know where the bar is.
I guess I don't either. I think what I'm reflecting on is observing that we are about to have more and more yoga teachers that aren't just 20-something white thin women.
Yeah.
Which
is great.
It is great, and I wonder how hiring will shift with these new folks on the market.
I don't think hiring will shift all that much until there is an understanding that to see someone on the schedule who, especially if you're someone who actually really does love practicing yoga, and then all of a sudden you see someone on the schedule who shares some aspect of your identity, you know, it's not guaranteed that you're going to love that person's class, but you're probably at least going to go try that person's class and give it a whirl, and at least have some positive, probably have some sort of positive rapport with that with that person, even if it's not as a yoga teacher. Certainly, when I was on retreat and saw other queer folks on the retreat, there was a moment of like, oh my God, we're not the only person here. There's more than one of us. This is fucking amazing. Like, there was that moment. So there is something to be said, but until people, especially in the sort of big box gym, and now big box yoga studios, until they recognize that that is valuable from a monetary standpoint, because that's the only reason changes ever get made in those companies, they won't necessarily change their hiring practices. I think there's also a significant, like, I'm not sure people who are making hiring decisions really have much understanding of yoga themselves in a lot of these bigger, like, not every fitness director at a gym is going to know something about yoga. So it would make sense that they'd just pick the person who looks like they have the most kind of impressive practice, or someone whom they've heard is a really popular teacher, right? Because that's their job, is to make sure that they hire teachers who put butts in the room. If the motive is simply profit, I don't think those decisions will change very much. If the motive actually was building community, then I think you would see them start to change. But then there can also be this weird, like, tokenism thing that starts to happen, where, like, you just where places either knowingly or unknowingly or subconsciously sort of like push the person with a marginalized identity to the forefront, to be like, look at us. We've got folks. So that's interesting
Oh,
too.
but like, yeah. Oh, but like, I mean, what is the scenario where it's not that?
Well, exactly. I'm not saying that that's necessarily a wrong.
No, I think that's okay.
But you have to, like, the only way to mitigate that is to just be aware that that might put that person in the position of being the black yoga teacher, or the trans yoga teacher, or the, you know what I mean? Like, it might put them in an awkward position.
Yeah, initially. And it what's important to notice is, does it end there? Is it like, look, we've got, one person that is this, is there people assisting that also look like them? Are there people
At
that also teach
the front
there at
desk, who
front
also
desk
look
that
like
look
the,
like
like, it, yeah, it has to look.
it has to be more than one person.
Yeah, it's got to be more than one person. But there's definitely, there's, but it's. I don't know. It also takes a lot of, it takes a lot of continuous effort to like continuously have that conversation, so that there can always be sort of a check-in of like, okay, yes, we want the studio to be full. Yes, we want the quality of teaching to be really high, and yes, we want to be able to pay the rent, and yes, we also want a diverse group of folks to feel welcome. Not necessarily a diverse group of folks to like have to fill the studio, but like to feel welcome. And those things always are in sort of negotiation with each other. And sometimes can get one aspect of that can get lost very quickly. So there you have it.
Yeah. I'm just reflecting on many different places I've been employed and featured as a larger. And I've never ever felt like I, at any of them, any of the places, one exception. Oh. One shitty exception. I once got asked to film for Yoga Works, for the My Yoga Works online,
Oh, yeah.
and specifically to film a series on practicing in a larger body. And I was so excited and had like so many conversations about it, and I'm in Boston and filming is in California, and when it got time to talk about compensation, it was like, we can't pay to get you out here, we can't pay for you to stay here, we can pay you $50 an hour for you to film, and that's it. And you know, I don't want to get anyone in trouble for that. I think there wasn't much money at the time for that. That was sort of the excuse. But I just remember thinking, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a
Someone's
minute.
paying you $50 an hour for use of your material and image in
In
perpetuity.
perpetuity. Yeah. And I was so disappointed because, you know, they're for profit, and I know that they're able to like buy studios that are hemorrhaging, you know, and they're just
When if
acquiring and expanding, and it's like, and you're gonna ask me, like this little freaking
When
teacher.
probably if they were really smart, they might like buy one less studio and like throw that into R&D for their online stuff.
Present, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, but who am I to say?
So, yeah, that was a bummer. And it ended with like, well, we have people in California that would be very grateful for the exposure and that are in
Oh,
larger.
that fucking.
We have a couple other fatties out here in California that would jump at this opportunity. And I'm like, all right.
All right. That exposure line is such bullshit. It's such bullshit.
It's so offensive. I don't get it. And if you're a newer yoga teacher and that exposure thing is getting sold to you, really, really give it a pause. It
Ask to
is
get
not, it's not fair. Are there times when it is fair? I think there are. I want to be balanced about this because my gut is to be like, no, it's just garbage. But like, I think that there are times that if you can measure the ROI, if you have a way and you see a clear line to it, like you see a real clear line, then go for it. But it is not the going currency.
No. Money is
Yeah.
the
Yep.
currency.
That's my call to action to anybody that might be listening.
I don't actually know. I mean, now if compensation is in the form of like if you're a new teacher and some festival is willing to make it sort of revenue neutral for you to teach there, meaning like they're covering all of the expenses to get there, but they're not actually going to compensate you for teaching. Like, I don't know, you might weigh that. But that is still some level of compensation. It's just your netting out. And if you really felt like it was going to be helpful to a helpful experience or a new experience that you want, then yeah, that sort of exposure might be worthwhile. But most stuff I'm very like, I don't know about that. So that's my two cents there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm going over our friendships. So friendships, I wanted to talk to you about this.
Are you
And
breaking up with me as a friend?
I think it's time to have a talk. No, if anything, I'm creepily squeezing you tighter. It's hard to make friends as an adult.
Yes, it is.
It's so hard. I, especially if you're like already like awkward, everybody's awkward and shy. We're all fucking
Yeah.
awkward and shy. But I was at the playground with Nick the other day, and this awesome lady came up to us. We have kids the same age, and we were just talking, and she, I don't know, we were just both looked like ragamuffins, and so did our kids. And she was super smart and funny. And she's like, "This is the first conversation where I haven't felt mom judged." And I was like, "Yeah, that's a thing. It's a very real thing, you know." Like,
Could you describe mom judged for our listeners?
it's when you're out in public and somebody comments on something about your child or you or products surrounding you or your child,
Sure.
that is like an underhanded dig at your parenting or your money or your choices or any of it. And here's an example. And this one doesn't quite count, but I was Frankie's I'm a big proponent of being barefoot, A, because it's hard to get her in shoes and have her not just rip them off. A,
Sure.
B, I kind of was part of the barefoot running scene for a while, and by scene I mean I tried it and enjoyed it. And when I worked at the bookstore, I used to wear the Vibram five fingers, and like I just think our feet are don't need to be in Bastilles as much as we tend to put them there. And I think that for walking and ankle strengthening for
Yes.
Frankie, I feel pretty good about her just, you know, being barefoot. Now, if there's shards of glass, you know, I cover her feet or I remove her from the shards of glass. But there was a grandmother there, and this is a generational thing.
Sure.
There was also a language barrier because she just we were communicating about how old the babies were, and then at one point, once we figured out how old the respective babies were, she pointed at her grandchild's feet, and then which had shoes, and then pointed at Frankie's, and sort of was like raised her voice and tone at me, and I was like, "Oh no!" I was like, "Yeah, there's no way to pantomime my philosophy on shoes, you know."
And
But
try that in charades next time.
I know. I was like, "I don't." Okay.
27 words sounds like.
But also, all these parents, you know, they just walk up and they're like, "How old? What are the benchmarks your kids are hitting?" And like, this will be drawn out over a longer conversation than that. It's not that abrupt, but that's
Yeah.
basically the heart of it. And everybody's just trying to make sure that they're normal.
Yeah.
And it's like, nobody's normal. We're
Nobody's
all
normal.
developing either too fast or too slow in various areas. And like, you know, people sizing up each other's like equipment and toys and safety precautions. And it's just constant. And like, are you in daycare? Are you doing this? Are you socializing? That like everything has got undertones of, you know, it's just the volume is turned up on the social judgment when, so I don't know why we're talking about this social judgment thing. Oh, friendship. Yeah. So I think it makes it even more complicated to make friends because
I'm
I have a
sure.
really low bullshit quotient. And if I get even a whiff of that from somebody new, you know, no. So it was really nice because this woman and I exchanged numbers and we're going to try to be adult friends. And this happened a couple times with people that I'm like, okay, I jive with you. We, you know, had we been in a bar 10 years ago, we probably, or had we gone to college together, we would have been friends. Whatever that means. But, you know, we don't have the structures in place as adults to socially meet people unless we're part of some religion.
Yeah.
That's how people are making friends.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're doing November Project, which is religion.
Yes.
Or, you know, the community at Lululemon, which is religion. All of it, all of this organized God worship. So friendship is hard. And all the while, we're all changing and then questioning our oldest friendship sometimes because maybe you've changed enough that this friendship has run its course.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's okay. It's okay to lovingly, mindfully divorce friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to do any of it, but how do you make new friends? Do you make new friends?
I mean, occasionally, I mean, my roommate is a rather social human. So if I go and hang out with him, he's bound to know, like, a large number of folks if we go to any gay space.
Oh, that's so helpful.
But that doesn't mean that it necessarily like spark friendships with those folks. I feel like a lot of the way that that queer people make friends nowadays is like through the various apps. Which I've actually been off of for almost a month for my own mental health. 'Cause just the number of like shitty conversations that I would have on there, or like obnoxious questions that would get lobbed my way. I was just like, you know what? There are plenty of things in my life giving me intense anxiety right now. I don't need for, this is one that I can literally just turn off. Like, I can just delete the goddamn things. But it is interesting because now, now that I don't have them on, it is a little bit like, okay, well, I could go out to a bar, though one of Boston's, like, handful of gay bars is closing on Saturday. I could
Which one?
Paradise.
What? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. The lease to that building is owned by MIT. So or rather I should say the building is owned by MIT. So the fact that they've been able to stay there that long is pretty remarkable. But it does mean like there's just not that many anymore. But yeah, but like, I don't know how, like, I'm so deeply like it takes me like a hot second to like, open up enough to let somebody like to want to interact with somebody on a regular basis to which I would refer to them as a friend. I also might have a really high bar for who I would label that.
Mm.
Like, I'm friendly mm-hmm. with many acquaintances, but like, I wouldn't necessarily
yes.
call them friends.
No. And here's the definition of, this is a good point. Like, people you hang out with, and like, there's different tierings. Like there's, hey, I'm going to call you in the middle of the night. Will you open up your door? If, you know, at 2 a.m. if I'm in trouble.
Like, yes, exactly.
Is different than, hey, this is somebody that I would hang out with.
Yeah.
You know, and go get a coffee and have a conversation or go do something. I don't know. So let's put a pin in that. I'd love to hear from our listeners about adult friending.
Isn't I'm that some sort of like website that got shut down or something like that with the new sex trafficking laws?
Oh, that sounds about right.
Making friends as adults, let's say.
I would, you know, I want to hear your extreme views on it, especially extroverts and introverts alike and the people in between.
Yes.
I want to make sure we spend some time talking about Core Power, which is now opening up a studio directly in front of Yoga Works Back Bay, and that's public.
Can you tell me which, like, what space it actually is?
366? It has to be, if you Google it, let me Google it. So I Googled it to confirm, and it's already listed in Google Maps.
Oh, wow. Is it above the coffee shop?
That's what I'm wondering. So do they smell blood in the water? Is that what's going on? Is that what
Do
they sniff around? And
I just think, I mean, maybe, but I doubt it. I just think that they probably saw that space and was like, that's a great location, because it is a great location. I think that's probably what they did. But I do think that that's fascinating.
Yeah, so it's 399 Boylston Street.
Oh.
Let me do a street view.
What's Tate's address?
399.
This is profoundly boring for anyone that doesn't live in Boston.
Sorry. Anyway, so what's interesting, let's make it more broadly interesting. What's interesting is they're notorious for having a very low cost, if not free, new member special.
Okay.
And so putting them right across from Yoga Works, this is really interesting because now there's a larger overlap of people that are interested in yoga. And I like to believe that the market can bear and support enough people being interested in yoga that these two businesses can thrive across the street from each other. But there's also part of me that's like, is that what Core Power was thinking? We're both going to thrive here?
No, I think Core Power is always in a stronger position because they have something specific that they're delivering. I don't see Yoga Works as having something specific that they're delivering.
Yes, it is above Tate because Tate is $3.99.
Okay.
Sorry. Well, they definitely have a more consistent, and consistent doesn't mean good. I'm just saying they have a more consistent product because the class is a scripted sequence and the training is a scripted training.
Yeah.
Whereas Yoga Works encourages and allows for at least some diversity of vinyasa, you know? And like Caitlin and Renee are leading a training that allows for a plurality of ideas, you know?
But the Core Power training is more or less a like vocational training. Like you are like the way that you would train to become a flywheel or soul cycle. Like you go and learn that company's way of doing things. And then
you can teach for them. Yes.
So you could teach for them. It's that kind of training, which is very different than the sort of traditional studio model of teacher training.
Yeah. And I know somebody that did the teacher training and was immediately hired to start leading their teacher trainings, like immediately.
Yes.
Because
we may be talking about the same person, because I know a person that also
did lovely that. Person.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're probably talking about the same person. So it's just a different model.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think there's going to be a big overlap when it comes to like new leads. And I think part of what they do, not just in Boston, but elsewhere, is they set up shop nearby other studios, preying on the lead pool.
Yeah.
hopes that they often win the war on amenities. Like you go in and they're
Oh,
very.
totally, totally, totally. They have always, like, I remember the first studio that they opened in Chicago, and I went in there and was like, I took one class and was like, this is awful, but this is a beautiful space.
So they come in, yeah, hard on the people that want a good workout and are interested in yoga a little bit, but mostly want a good workout. And those are people that often fill the bellies of other yoga studios. You know, yoga studios don't necessarily thrive on serious students. A
No.
portion of them are serious students. But there's always the great chunk in the middle that are like, I love yoga and I love the workout and I can get this multiple places.
Yeah.
Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds and how it does. I think it's going to do great, and I wonder if it'll affect the surrounding studios.
I think I don't know. It will and it won't. I think I almost wonder if it affects, I mean, it's going to affect every studio in terms of like the new influx of folks that come into Boston every, September and January, like getting the word out to those people that like, hey, come try some yoga. Like, yes, having a core powered downtown is going to have an effect on that. But I would almost think that in terms of already established students, I'm not sure that it's going to affect that, especially at places like North End and South Boston, and like the studios that are still owned locally, I'm not sure that it will affect the local student population all that much. That's already, established at those places, especially because now in Boston, everybody has like, I don't mean this in a negative way, but there's less of a like, this is my studio, I only come here. Is much more of a circulation of folks from studio to studio.
So that's why I think what it's actually going to affect is just the new lead pool.
Yeah.
The new pool of potential yoga students will.
Yeah.
But I think what'll happen also is there'll be a degree of people that try it and then are like, yeah, I think I like this yoga. Let me try the one across the street too.
Yeah.
Don't know. It is interesting to hear the rumblings of like anxiety though,
Oh, I'm sure.
beginning to crawl through the web.
I crawl through the web.
And I do mean the web, not the interweb.
Just the
What?
web.
Just the web.
The
Oh, the other
analog
thing I
web.
that's the other thing I want to talk to you about. I had this thought that sometimes, so I really enjoy occasionally subbing classes. I, well, at least right now in my life, I am. Like,
Okay.
and I had a thought that one of the reasons I enjoy it is, and this is so fucked up, but hear me out. Sometimes I feel a subtle sense of freedom with subbing a class. Like, oh, this would be a really nice class for me to try this thing that I've yet to try elsewhere. Whether it be like a linguistic choice or a thing we're doing or not doing choice, I find that sometimes subbing is the place to do that. And I can hear all the problems with that as I say it out loud. Do you ever feel that?
No, I think what usually happens more, the conversation that goes on in my head when I'm subbing is how do I give them the process of giving them something that's familiar like especially if I'm subbing for someone whose teaching style is different than mine. Not that I would ever really sub unless it was like a super last minute for someone whose style was like radically different, but you know, everybody's different and they all have their own, you know, people who come to their classes have expectations of like the things that are usually a part of the class. So I find myself more having the negotiation of like, how do I still teach something without overwhelming them with the newness of the situation, especially because sometimes the regulars are the folks that don't necessarily check the schedule to make sure that the teacher that they want to take from is still teaching. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
So it often is like, okay, how am I gonna take the thing that I'm teaching this week and throw in a fucking sun salutation? Like that's the conversation that goes through my mind is how am I going to make this familiar enough that they're willing to come along for the ride. And obviously that's different. Like if I'm subbing for Ryan Hill, like there's not actually much of a conversion that goes on. I just teach my normal class. But if I'm subbing for someone else, especially over at Charlestown, there's more of a there's more of a editing process.
Okay, I think you put your finger on it. Once, I think many teachers are thinking, how do I offer something that's in the spirit of the regular teacher's class? And like, how do I sort of honor how do I honor their spirit and not completely jar their regulars, you know? So you're already slipping into someone else's skin a little. There's already a little bit of a dance there in the process of editing. And I think that it's in that empathetic exercise that parts of my brain get lit up and excited about other things that might be an opportunity to explore. You know, because already I think people are expecting a transmuted sort of offering. I think, you know, students know that, oh, this teacher is subbing and they're probably subbing in the spirit of whoever's class it is. So that opens up the door for other, I think, creative reflections. Maybe that's it.
Okay.
All right, now I understand what's happening and why I get excited about subbing is I see it as an opportunity to reframe how I'm thinking about other things that maybe I'm doing more on autopilot.
Sure. Well, I also think there's more of a diversity of,
People in the class, too.
well, there's diversity of people in the class, but I was more thinking like specifically at Down Under, there's you end up, well, you specifically, I don't know if all of the teachers, at least from what I've seen, end up subbing a fairly wide variety in terms of the name of the class on the schedule. So there's probably much, depending on what the name of that class that you're subbing for is, there may be more of a more expectation or less expectation from the students in terms of what's supposed to happen in that class.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. Anyway, I think it's good. I think it's important to sub from time to time. A, because be fucking nice and help each other out. But B, it's also a creative opportunity.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm looking at one of the points that you wrote down, and I have no recollection of it. Maybe it's yours. Yoga therapy.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you or people listening to the podcast have, well, it comes up for a number of reasons. So it comes up because there have been a lot of conversations with folks in the studio about what that actually means. And then parallel to that, Jay Brown has been doing a really good job interrogating a lot of the people who call themselves yoga therapists as to what that actually is and what the reasoning behind calling it yoga therapy actually is. So it's just been spinning around in my brain a lot because because of those conversations, but also because, you know, that is the reason why I'm going back to school this fall. I'm not going to take a yoga therapy training because I think a lot of them are bullshit. But I am going to take a training that gives me a certificate to practice a particular set of skills that I very much associate with yoga therapy. And you know, I go back and forth between just throwing the term out completely, just being like, no, this is too convoluted for folks. And actually being like really clear that this is how I practice yoga therapy. And trying to get really concise about what my experience of that has been in terms of working with a teacher who can and does deliver some pretty significant therapeutic benefits. And how I tend to work with folks one-on-one, even though most of my work with folks one-on-one isn't explicitly labeled yoga therapy. I do think of it through that lens when I'm working with someone. When I'm working with anybody with whom I'm not just teaching concrete information. Like if someone comes like, I would like to learn this thing, how to do this technique, then I will just teach that technique. Done. I don't necessarily think about that in terms of yoga therapy. But if someone's coming in general, then yeah, I sort of hold the frame of yoga therapy in the back of my head.
I had a conversation with somebody the other day that identified themselves as a yoga therapist. And I had a visceral response to it.
Yeah. I have
And
more of a visceral response to someone to someone identifying themselves as a yoga therapist, than the term yoga therapy. And I haven't quite been able to parse out why. But the term yoga therapy doesn't give me that like gut eye roll, that the term yoga therapist does, especially if one is self-identifying. But go ahead.
yeah, just I agree with you. I think that therapist and I practice yoga therapy feels different.
Yeah.
But I, you know, and this person was lovely, and I'm sure what they're doing for their clients is beneficial. But in the context of the conversation, it felt to me that what they were actually saying is, I do this really special thing that you're not doing, and other people that don't have this designation are definitely not doing. And I'm like, and my gut is like, yeah, if it's yoga, it's inherently got some therapeutic benefits. Let's not, you know what I mean? It was like a way to differentiate.
Yeah, that's where I start to have issue too.
But people are so hungry to differentiate and to stand out and to validate. And it just doesn't feel like that's what those trainings actually end up doing
No.
yet. They could down the road. I really do think they could, but I think that you're right to go, to massage therapy, because then you will leave with an actual clear designation of and yeah. scope of practice on something that intersects in a very meaningful way with being a yoga teacher.
Yes. Well, I also think that, you know, if we are going to have something called yoga therapy, then that has to assume that both the, and again, I'm still working through this, but I believe that has to presume that the person in the role, for lack of a term, lack of a better term, in the role of yoga therapist, has to have a continuing connection and continuing practice of yoga. And the person in the role of the student has to have a pre-existing connection to yoga. And that the relationship between those two people is a large part of the active ingredient of what is potentially beneficial. Especially if the yoga therapist is, as a rule, not a diagnostic practitioner. Because the thing that you could provide as someone who might practice yoga therapy is a person to come in and work with what's present in this person's overall sense of wellness or overall suffering, and not have it be about the end goal being diagnosis, as it is in every other profession that's been medicalized. Or inserted into the insurance structure. And it's not that it's just the relationship. There has to be a set of skills that is helpful, but I'm also not really sure that I'm not really sure that if you, Kate, met with someone who was having lower back pain and you were able to help them with their lower back pain in a holistic way, meaning also considering the fact that their lower back pain may have something to do with their emotional experience, may have something to do with something going on psychologically, may have something to do with something going on even spiritually. Like, if you're able to hold the full context of this human who has low back pain and the end result is they receive some benefit, I'm not sure that wasn't you just practicing yoga therapy.
Of course. Yes.
It is.
Like this, but don't you dare call yourself, you know.
But don't you dare. Exactly. And if the designation is just that, if we're going to come to a understanding that culturally that a yoga therapist needs to be able to communicate with the healthcare system, then that's great. We should maybe strive for that to some regard. But then that should just be a separate training of its own. Like that we don't want to insert that in a way that gets in the way of yoga therapy, because then we start, I feel like people, you know, you give people a little bit of that medical language and then all of a sudden they start
getting weird.
Get weird. And you know, everybody I know that's ever come out of a yoga therapy program, they tend to be on either, you know, depending on the program, have a bias towards looking for something wrong. Like, I remember being in a bodywork seminar and someone was working on my leg and they actually said to me, "Oh, there's something wrong with your ankle. You don't have the requisite degrees of dorsiflexion, or plantar flexion rather, that an ankle is supposed to have. And I just was like, why would you ever say that to somebody? And then the teacher came over, who was running the bodywork session, and adjusted my ankle, and then was like, no, that's just Ryan's ankle. Like, that's just how Ryan's ankle works. There's no, like, no. So there's that side, and then there's the other side, which, can be way more oriented around a psychological or psychosomatic approach, or way more oriented around Ayurveda. Because all of these things, yes, absolutely are valuable within the context of yoga therapy. But I think it actually needs to model itself less on a physical therapy model, which I think is what a lot of people are trying to do, and like really just focus on actually understanding what the potential benefit of a one-on-one, therapeutic relationship actually could do in the context of yoga. And that's the thing to me that will prevent it from ever being part of the medical establishment, is because it's a yoga therapy. The only thing that everybody can agree on across all schools of yoga, across all scholarly writings on yoga, across all sort of textual mentions of yoga, is that we're dealing with some sense of essence. Bodhicitta, Purusha, soul, whatever you want to call it, we're dealing with some fundamental sense of essence. And if you remove that, then you're just talking about a psychotherapy or a physical therapy or a or spiritual counseling, or, well, no, that doesn't really make much sense. But you, if you remove that, you really are just dealing, you're having someone be a physical therapist,
Yeah,
or you're
and but
having,
with like a watered down,
yes,
the physical therapist have at least had some time to like figure out what their protocols are.
exactly.
And
And
sorry, but I have some distrust for the continuity between, yoga, quote unquote, therapy schools.
yes, I also have distrust between the continuity of physical therapy schools, to be perfectly honest, and psychotherapy schools, to be perfectly honest.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
But I think I think it's something that anybody who is involved, myself included, in teaching yoga in a way that highlights and emphasizes its therapeutic benefits, by which I mean the ability to restore a sense of wellness. We have to be constantly grappling with these questions, because what we are doing is meant to be holistic, and I really do think that it is, that the moment we try and couch it in one, try to pull it towards psychotherapy, or try to pull it towards physical therapy, or try to pull it towards the medical establishment, I think we're doing a disservice to what's actually possible. And we have to acknowledge that we don't know what's, I mean, this field has not actually really been around for that long. This idea that this could be a benefit to folks, really just, I mean, some people would argue against me, but yes,
No,
I
we're
am,
still in the Wild West.
we're still in the Wild West. Let's just be perfectly clear about that. So I just think that the best we can do right now is to have everybody be really clear about what exactly it is they're doing, so that at some point we could have some, consensus on what the what the term actually means, or whether we're just going to throw out the term altogether.
Yeah, or allow it and loosen up about it.
Exactly. And just let every just let the let practitioners who
Caveat emptor, let the buyer
yeah,
be fucking ware.
exactly. And yeah, I just think it's an interesting question. I think there are a lot of people on their high fucking horse about it. And I don't know this for a fact, but I would wonder how much those people who are on their high fucking horse about it are actually working with folks individually therapeutically. Like, how much of their time is actually spent doing that? And I wouldn't want to go take a yoga therapy training with them. I am learning yoga therapy from someone who's literally just in his office every day working with folks. So that's who I would want to learn from.
Caveat emptor.
Anyways, that's my rant for the day.
That's a good one.
This has been unrolled.
Yes, it has. Follow us, like us, send us questions. Above all, send us questions. And if you want to keep hearing us do this from time to time and want to help us keep the lights on, we have a Patreon. Any little bit is genuinely appreciated. What's our email for those of you that want to tell us we're wrong? And we love that. So please feel free to, in the nicest way, because we're real people.
unrolledpodcast@gmail.com.
Brilliant.
And a quick plug, if you made it this far, the second episode of my other podcast, Just Yoga, is out. And it's an interview with Trina Altman, who many of you may have heard of as a yoga teacher, Pilates teacher out in California. So you can go check out that on all
Go
of your
listen.
favorite podcasting apps. So, yeah. Bye.
Bye.